Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary.
Whatever. Goofball. You just sit there.
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in, logging in, watching this video on YouTube, or subscribing to us wherever you find your podcasts. We look forward to the conversation this week. Our goal here on the podcast is to connect the conversation from Sunday to our real lives lived every weekday. Thomas loves that part. In fact, we have him on the podcast today. Thomas, how's it going?
That's rough, man. You doing well?
Yeah. Was that a train wreck?
It's good. No, it's good.
Hey, it's great. Do me a solid. Just go to your campus, find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. Stay connected. Get connected here at CalvaryBible.com.
Jay.
Yes.
It's a nice sweater.
Thank you, man.
I would have worn mine. We got these Christmas gifts yesterday.
We did get these Christmas gifts. Free swag.
Swag.
You know.
The back is cool.
The back is really cool. Yeah. Maybe we'll get a shot of that for B-roll.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very generous for Calvary to give us those for our Christmas present.
Okay, so here's.
Along with the love gift, which was so
outstanding.
Loving. Yeah, thank you,
Calvary. I feel so loved by Calvary all the time.
I really do,
too. It's the greatest church to ever work for.
It really is.
It's the greatest church to just be a part of.
I would agree.
Yes.
We might be partial.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't sound partial. It sounds like an impartial comment.
Totally.
It seems like there's a trend happening.
Yes.
And I'm all for it.
Yes.
I think. Is that people are distancing themselves from hoodies.
Yes.
And moving to the crew neck sweater.
Going back.
How do you feel about that?
You know what? I love it. I love both of them. I've always loved both of them.
Yeah.
For a long time, I wore a really dorky crew neck sweatshirt that was from Oxford.
Yeah.
That Kristen always said I looked like a dorkin that I loved. So I'm glad that I was ahead of the style.
Dude, you're ahead.
Trend.
You are the fashion trend.
Yes. I have a lot of freedom in my fashion.
I guess, I'd like the hoodie. It just feels so comfortable.
Yes.
But how often do you wear the hood?
As a bald man, quite often. Quite often. Especially if you get a hat.
Yeah.
Okay. In the wintertime, it's hard to remember a hat. In the summer, it's not because you're like, if I don't bring a hat, I will be sunburned.
Sunburnt, for sure.
But in the winter, it's all right. To forget.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, totally. Hey, people don't even appreciate
the banter.
You're not steering this conversation. Oh, yeah. I know you played host last week.
That's great.
But sit back and
relax. Did you watch the episode or did you listen to it?
I watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
We're no longer in the studio. I missed the studio.
We are not in the seats today. No. I think that the Calvary Cup should come back. I completely agree with our senior pastor.
It should come back.
That was a great story.
Yeah.
If you missed it, you need to go listen to a sermon.
Yep.
At least the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then listen to the first 5 minutes of the weekly last week, and you will know and be caught up. But what do you think about the Calvary Cup?
You know, I'm not sure his story was totally true. But,
yes, 100% accurate.
Yeah, I remember they had won it. The Calvary Cup is this trophy that was given to the campus that won a golf scramble.
Right.
The Boulder campus has some great golfers.
Mm-hmm. Like really great golfers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they won it like 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And then I may have like stacked a team or two to help bring it to the Erie campus. But so the Calvary Cup got lost. Like,
I remember the year that we won it. I was there.
Yeah.
I played on a foursome. That
did you win it for us? Were you on the team? Oh, okay.
I might have carried one shot the whole day.
That's all you needed in a good scramble.
That's all you needed in a good scramble. But I remember winning, and the disbelief on his face that we had won it was priceless.
I wonder, my good friend John could be driving from place to place right now, maybe perhaps bringing some apple cider donuts to Erie. I don't know. He may have been one of the players that won that for the Erie campus. Oh. I think he was.
Really?
Yeah. He's a really good golfer.
That's fun. I didn't know John was.
Yeah, no, he's really good. So if we do play again, John, if you're listening, you are an honorary member of the Erie campus.
Guaranteed spot. Save it for you. Oh, that's fun. Yes, but it is good to be at Calvary and to be a part of this church. It's really interesting to come back after Christmas break, this Advent season, the Christmas series, and then step back into 1 Corinthians, because we are stepping into some deep waters, it feels like.
Well, I don't know. What I feel like is happening is Paul has like given a large chunk of his letter. Mm-hmm. We're talking three chapters now, chapter 8, 9, and we're going to wrap up chapter 10 this week. So three chapters to one essential question. Mm. Can we eat meat sacrificed to idols?
Let's just go back and rewind the clock that he's writing on papyri, which is very limited resource at the time. So we don't know how much he had with him. You know, we don't know those things. But if you're going to give that much time in papyri to something, it must be that important.
Yeah. I think it's like three chapters of the Bible are devoted to this. And so sometimes it feels like each week people are like, it's the same theme. It's the same idea. Though he's adding a new layer, or I've said lens, to the conversation.
Yeah, you had but four lenses this week.
The fourth lens will come this week. Yeah, it's the fourth lens. But it just feels like, Paul, could you have like saved some space and written on like medicinal uses of certain substances or gender, you know, questions that we have, mm-hmm. more stuff on marriage. Like this just seems like a lot of other topics that are somewhat silent at times. Why three chapters to this? But I actually think the more I think about it, because this is where most of us live, is how do I make decisions? Mm-hmm. Specifically when there's not a moral imperative that's been revealed of this is what's right, this is what's wrong, this is what's black, this is what's white. Well, what do? Do I go to this college, that college? Do I take this job, that job? Do I, you know, participate in this church, that church? I mean, there's 1,000 questions a day. And he's like, all right, well, let's talk about how to make decisions.
So you have four lenses. First one is, how does this impact the church?
Yep, your brothers and sisters in the church.
Yep.
So how does it build them up not to cause those with a weaker conscience to stumble? Mm-hmm. So that's one.
How does it impact unbelievers?
Yep. Our mission is to win many to Christ. So does this put roadblocks up or unnecessary hurdles for people to come to know Christ?
Okay. And then how do we impact, how does this impact our freedom?
Yeah.
Which, if you put yourself in a Greco-Roman era, which all good biblical studies needs to start in that genre, right?
Yeah, root it in the context. It was written
in context. Yep. Is he talking about the freedom that you and I think about, like personal freedom, America, bald eagles, rights, Bill of Rights, human dignity written within the law of the land? Or is he thinking about a Roman expression of this, of authority, freedom, in a way that I'm not anticipating?
I think that's a harder question. Yeah, I think it's more rooted in Christian liberties.
Okay.
So Christ accomplished a lot for us to set us free from a lot of religious requirements, specifically wrapped up in temple worship, things that are clean, unclean, ceremonial events that would happen that are all fulfilled in Christ. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've been living in a world that has been practicing those things for some time, and now are told that you're free from some of those activities, it's going to cause some conflict. Mm-hmm. So I think he's primarily referencing Christian liberties.
Okay, so it's Christian
liberty. I could expand it to the same principles apply. How do you use all liberties?
Right.
But I think what Paul is addressing is Christian liberties.
That's good. I'm glad I asked that clarifying question. The lens I didn't think that I want to challenge is the first lens would be we have the resurrection. That's the first lens, right? Because he spent the majority of the beginning of the book talking about the resurrection. He's going to spend the majority of some of the end of the book in the resurrection. Is that a lens that we need to put on here within the context of chapter 9, 8, 9, 10?
Well, I think there's the only way you're able to have the outlook of how does this affect my brother or sister in the church? How does this affect people outside the church? How does this affect me using my freedom that I might not be enslaved to temptations? Is because of the resurrection. Mm. So I think the resurrection is the thing that permits this conversation in the first place. If there is no resurrection, then you don't get to have a conversation like this.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the Christian liberties to even wrestle with. Mm. So
interesting.
Yeah, I think the resurrection is the foundation for why we're able to even have the conversation.
Yeah.
That's probably how I frame it.
Yeah, that's good. I appreciate that because I'm thinking about the context because I so here's the thing. I listened to all of 1 Corinthians last week.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Just as, like, I was cleaning the house, I was like, I need to recenter myself again in this book, put it on play, which I enjoy doing in the meantime. But I was just like, oh, man, are we missing again, like, some of the major themes of the first few chapters of 1 Corinthians because we're so far removed in the sermon series going from week to week.
Yeah.
And I think the resurrection has a really profound impact on how we view our brothers in Christ, our unbelievers, because mm-hmm. we're trying, here's what Paul's doing, right? He's trying to win everyone to Christ.
Yeah.
That is his ultimate aim. It is his passion. If I was going to give him a mission statement, he wanted to show anyone who would listen to him that Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Yes.
And I think that's just super interesting as you sort of read him over and over again.
That is one of the challenges, like, to your point. We have broken down a letter that is intended to be read in one sitting, mm-hmm. right? So it's one letter to be read in its entirety to a community, and we're breaking it apart piece by piece. I think this week's connection to chapter one is that, hey, you are a spiritually blessed community because of the resurrection, mm-hmm. but you don't want to use your spiritual blessings to lead you into temptation. So it's like the bolstering of pride of, like, man, we are the spiritually blessed community. So if you go back to chapter 1, verse, was it 4 through 9, it says, you've been enriched in every way, not lacking any gift. Mm-hmm. Why? Because of what Christ accomplished. Okay, how are you using that? And are you using it in such a way that actually leads you away from the one that gave you these gifts? Mm-hmm. But it is true. It's like, it's hard when you start breaking down the chapters in a way that Paul wouldn't have imagined. There's no chapter headings. There's no verse headings. It was just a letter.
Right.
And we're taking, you know, bits by bit or pieces by pieces.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a brilliant conversation because I really love how you sort of connected up in 9, coming back down to 10. And there's some impetus for what we don't want to be as Christians. Let me just read those in chapter 10. Idolaters, sexual immoral. Testers of Christ, so I don't know how you would sum that up. I'm trying to think, put Christ to the test. Grumblers, right? But so, and he's using some Old Testament stories to catch our attention, which I'm thinking in Corinth, do they know these Old Testament stories?
Yeah,
they must have if he's going to reference them. But he's telling us these examples to win us to an argument. That's later on in the verses.
Yeah.
What do you think about these examples and how to read sort of chapter 10 with the Old Testament examples?
Yeah. Well, if you're doing your hermeneutics, which is like kind of how you pull apart the text, how you look at the text, what is it saying? When you get to chapter 10, it begins with the word for, mm-hmm. which is why I started up in chapter 9, verse 24, because the for, you could always circle in your Bible. It's the because statement.
Right.
So, because I do not want you to be unaware. Because of what? It's in that line of like the therefores, because, mm-hmm. so that. It's completing a thought. So if you go back up to chapter 9, he's just finished this phrase about, or this teaching about, do you not know that in a race all the runners run? And so run in a certain way as to win the prize. And if you don't train, you might be disqualified. Like you might be unfruitful in your ministry. And then you get to chapter 10:1, because. So he's going to fill in the, okay, why are you disqualified? Because you took spiritual blessings that brought freedom and you turned them on yourself and become idolaters, meaning spiritual adulterers. You turned your heart's affections away from the one that brought you freedom to another. Started giving it to idols and worship and all of the shenanigans that comes with that. And he mentions here like sexual immorality and how the Israelites were participating in that in the wilderness. The testing of Christ. Think of Jesus' own temptation.
Yeah.
Right? He says, throw yourself off. Surely, you know, the Father will send angels. And Jesus says, well, we shouldn't put the Lord, our God, to the test. How do you test Christ? It's like, you're going to do this for me, right? Like, I went to church. I did these good things. Now you owe me. Mm-hmm. Like, don't be testing Christ. How they do it in the wilderness, they're doing that by, hey, you owe us. You know, where's our food? Where's our water? Where's our drink? Did you bring us out here to die?
Right.
The grumbling piece is interesting because wherever they're grumbling in the wilderness, they're always grumbling against the leadership. Mm. So what God always condemns them for is they're grumbling against Moses. Mm-hmm. And so potentially here in Corinth, they're grumbling against Paul, right? So Paul has been having to advocate for himself as an apostle, as the one that founded the church, as one worthy to listen to.
Right.
And so that's the parallel is, okay, are you guys who are a spiritually blessed community turning your hearts away from God and becoming idolaters again, which is what Corinth was built on, even up to the grumbling, are you grumbling against your leadership like they did in the wilderness? Mm-hmm. Don't do that. That's an example that was written down for us to not follow, right? To learn from. So I don't remember exactly what the question was.
No, I think it's just really good conversation about, you said something that I thought was very profound this week and talk about, these are people that had it all in the Old Testament. Because they had it all, they fell into these temptations. And your point was, because you have every spiritual blessing, you're actually more prone for temptation than if you didn't have all these things.
If you would be prideful in them. Like there's a posture of humility in them, but the Israelites become prideful. We often become prideful.
Right.
Like God did this. Surely he's going to do it again. Do it in the same way. Do it exceedingly more. That's the testing of Christ. And so you have these people who says, okay, my beloved, if you think you're standing firm, like you think you're rock solid, untouchable, like I have the Christian liberty to do X, Y, or Z, therefore I'm going to do it. You should be cautious because pride comes before this collapse. And look at the collapse that happened to your history, your ancestors. And to your point, I don't think they knew these stories before Paul started the church, but he spent 18 months with them.
Yeah.
Probably teaching them these stories. So now he's like recalling, you know, what they're part of. I just love the Our Fathers because it brings these orphans, so to speak, that have been brought into the family, into God's story. So Gentiles who didn't grow up in Jewish homes, do you know who our father? You've been brought into this new family. It's just so cool.
You know, I had a really curious question about how does Paul view the Old Testament and how does he apply it to himself and his own reading? We get a sense of how he does it here.
Yeah.
I mean, I was even just doing a staff devotion on this and I was like, oh, Paul has a hermeneutic of the Old Testament that's sort of on a display. It's not these figurative stories. They're real stories, right?
Yeah.
And he mines them for the spiritual principle. Is that generous or is that stingy on?
I don't know. I mean, smarter people than I could probably describe it in a better way. I think for me, I've always thought of it this way, is Paul knows his Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Jesus has come to fulfill the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. So now Paul, who knows his Old Testament and knows what Jesus has accomplished, is helping a New Testament community see what the implications will be now living. Mm-hmm. So instead of living out of just the Old Testament, it's living out of the Old Testament fulfilled in Jesus Christ, putting these two pieces together. I think his view is always, okay, Jesus came.
Right.
What does this reinterpret maybe almost of the Old Testament? Or not even reinterpret, but like fulfill? Mm-hmm. Like what mysteries were unknown before Christ that are now known?
Right.
Not puzzles to be solved, but just things that were unknown that are now known. So, for example.
Yeah, a really strange one.
Like that rock that provided water in the wilderness was Christ.
That's what I'm getting to. It's like, okay, Paul.
Okay, Paul. Yeah.
He was ushered on by the Holy Spirit, so he's not making this up on himself.
No, but I think
on his own.
Think about Jesus does this too, right? When he's talking to those who are claiming Abraham as their father, and Jesus says to them in John, before Abraham was, I am. You're like, wait a minute, who did you just claim to be? You claim to be the one in which Moses is speaking with, or at least was speaking to Moses out of the burning bush.
Right.
You're going, hold on a second. Jesus is showing us his activity in Israel's story.
Yeah.
Which is just awesome.
It is awesome. It just makes me want to read the Old Testament over and over again.
Yeah.
Super fun. It's super fun.
It's just, I mean, you think, this is one of those, like, put this in your understanding as a Christian. It wasn't as there was a big bad God in Israel's story, and then Jesus came, and we all like Jesus.
Right.
It's like Jesus was part of the whole story the whole time.
Right.
Like maybe Jacob wrestling with Jesus, you know, Jesus in the story of the rock of being with Moses. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah. Even like the strangeness of the fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through sea and all were baptized into Moses, into the cloud and in the sea. You're like, I thought they're just fleeing from Pharaoh. And God did a miraculous work.
Yeah.
You're like, there's more here at stake.
Yeah.
There's an identity in which they inherit from these actions that we inherit from Jesus and being baptized into him. He's like, yeah, it's the same.
It's like you've been, you came through the sea, through the water.
Yeah.
And were united in the mission of Moses.
Right.
You're like, I thought we were just running.
Yeah, totally. And it's just like, great. How is Paul reading the Old Testament?
Yeah.
And how imaginative, maybe that's a word to use in this place, that he's thinking about where he sees Christ in a way that's creative, ushering in by the Holy Spirit. I want to give guardrails. He's just not making this up on himself, by himself, right? But he's really thinking. The apostles do this quite often in the epistles. I think of even Peter in his own epistle has some interesting things about the Old Testament.
I think the difference, though, is from like you and me doing it.
Right. Yeah, that'd be helpful. What's the difference?
They actually talked to Jesus.
Yeah, that's great.
So like probably Jesus is like, hey, you want to hear something pretty wild? I was the rock.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
And they didn't document it in the Gospels, but they
because remember on the road to Emmaus, Jesus is walking with these disciples explaining how all of this had to transpire from the Old Testament.
Right.
And then he shows himself in the Old Testament from beginning to end.
Right.
You're like, so he's the one that taught them this.
Yeah. And John says that if they try to encapsulate everything that Jesus taught or said, there'd be volumes upon volumes. It can't happen. So clearly it's something
they
knew.
Maybe now with AI, it could have been cataloged.
All right. I think the most important thing about chapter 10 is this in verse 13, is God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure. That's your real life lived this week in this podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I'm tempted.
I want to make it out.
I can't withstand this temptation. There's no way I could do it.
I think.
And he says, okay, actually, you talked about it's not him fleeing from temptation, him going through it.
I think that's what I'm trying to bring out on Sunday. It's like,
I don't know what that means, but I think you're right.
Yeah. It's hard because that's not what it feels like. It doesn't feel like I failed because I failed to see the way out. Mm-hmm. It feels like I failed because I'm not able to get out. At least that's my experience.
Right.
Whereas this text is saying, hey, Thomas, if you've ever told yourself you failed because there wasn't a way out, that's a lie.
Right.
You missed the way out. So let's just talk about the way out because Hebrews 4, which we went to, we have a great high priest who's come to us. I pulled it up. We have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. So let us draw. So then, with confidence, let us draw near to the throne of grace that we might receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need. So the goal is not by your confidence. That's what he's saying to these guys who think that you are totally free to do all these things. It's self-confidence or overconfidence.
Right.
But we cling to Jesus. So let us, with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace. That's what we need in times of temptation. We might receive mercy. And Jesus was tempted in all the ways that we are. Mm-hmm. And there are real temptations.
Right.
And 100% of the time, it says that he never failed. So 100% of the time, he endured it. And I love what Hebrews goes on to say is, considered him who endured these things to death. Like, we haven't resisted to the point of death.
Yeah, or sweating blood.
Yeah, so it's like, whenever I gave up before it killed me.
Yeah.
Which means there was more to go.
Yeah.
Jesus found the way through 100% of the time. So my encouragement is, link up to Jesus who can show me the way through. Now, here's the challenge, I think. We didn't get into this on Sunday. What begins as a moral decision, so should I drink this eat this, look at this, watch this, whatever. You just put it in a category. Can become a habit that now your body has a muscle memory to.
Yes.
It's really hard to break muscle memory. So then, like, we feel like we're caught in these decisions. You're like, well, I don't even know if, am I choosing this anymore?
Right.
I don't feel consciously choosing this.
I would think it'd be Romans 7. I do what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's him wrestling that out.
Exactly.
Right.
And so you have the person who, like, a moral decision was like, I'm going to be drinking to amend whatever these feelings are. Well, now my body, every time I feel this way, the muscle memory is drink.
Right.
And so it's a little, it's very, very challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think you nailed it. It's like, I'm doing things I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Now, now where am I? And right. Paul says it like, what a wretched man am I? Who will save me from this body of death? And then thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God.
That Jesus Christ came. And that's what I think Hebrews is saying is, it's not you.
Right.
Is if you want any help, you need to first turn over to the Lord, mm-hmm. which the best recovery systems, the roots are Christian, and now they're different, but it's recognizing that you're powerless,
yeah,
and recognizing that you need Jesus Christ,
right?
First and foremost, you know, it's like a higher power. Sure, Jesus is what you need,
right?
Then you need people to help you. Now, the danger of, I think, relying only on community, and Perry brought this up in his message, which is really helpful, is this whole text is saturated with communal language,
right?
So community is not enough to keep you on the straight and narrow, so to speak, because they all sinned and displeased God as a community.
As a community, yeah.
Yeah, but they are a resource in the midst of temptation. So, like in my own temptations, it's like, okay, preemptively, were there things that I could have done? Mm-hmm. Yep, unscheduled free time, you know, not super helpful for me, right? Right. If you're in the midst of it, could I call my friend Jay? Can someone come pick me up?
Right.
Is there someone I should have let know? Are there boundaries I can put in place? There are a lot of things. And if we just look at it and say, those are a lot of things I just didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's because our ultimate aim is not to please God in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think a lot of temptation comes down to we're just unaware of God himself. It's in the room.
Yeah.
God himself is in the situation.
Yeah.
And we're not even to the point where we could be like Jesus and go through temptation to death.
Yeah.
Because most of the time we live lives not even God aware of the reality
yeah.
of that.
Which I think is going to be, I mean, that's where our fourth lens is.
Right.
So consider okay, those cool. in the church, consider those outside the church, consider right. yourself that this freedom doesn't lead you into temptation and away from the Lord.
Right.
And then this fourth lens at the very end, what does he say? Whether I eat or drink, I do it all to the glory of God.
Yeah.
So he's going to put this fourth layer on to say, okay, you're asking, can I do this? I'm asking you, does that action bring glory to God?
Right.
And how do you eat and drink to the glory of God? That's yeah. that's Sunday's conversation.
Yeah, I'm curious, a question I would have in heaven to the Israelites is, did you think God was busy when he was meeting with Moses that you thought you needed to catch his attention again with the golden calf? Because you're just unaware of God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You didn't know that he actually could do both things at the same time.
I don't know. This,
you know, like, that's yeah. just interesting to me. Think about that. Most of the ways in which I fail in being tempted is that I'm just not present to there's a present God.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like what John says, like, well, Jesus says this too. It's like, we love our deeds of darkness. Because in darkness, you're unaware that there's a present of light. It's like, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so in isolation, right? Secrecy.
Yeah, secrecy.
So yeah. One of the ways that you get out of temptations is you bring it out of secrecy, mm-hmm. out of isolation. Those are two very practical steps.
Right.
It's like, where's the area that you're failing? And then here's a question, who else knows that this is your area of struggle?
Right.
And when someone says, nobody, go, that's a problem, mm-hmm. you know, because you're bringing someone else, even like godly wisdom then, into the conversation.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a good conversation. I think, you know, as we wrap it up, what really he's wanting to keep the Corinthian church from and what he's going to land it with the fourth lens of being God, everything to the glory of God, is that he wants them to flee from idolatry.
Yeah.
We are so easy. I'm so easy at worshiping other things outside of God.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's just trying to wake us up to that reality.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Which, again, the context is meat is sacrificed to idols at temples, mm-hmm. in temple festivities and temple worship. And so this, the first two chapters are, can I eat meat there? Now, we're going to turn the corner and it's going to say, well, how about any meat sacrificed to idols that now is being sold in the meat markets or I find in my neighbor's house? It's going to be a little bit different. But there, or in this past few chapters, Paul's like, why are you trying to get so close to the temptations that are availing themselves to you? Like, it's not worth it. Yeah. So maybe you have the liberty, sure, but you think you're going to stand firm there at the temple worship? Like, we all have been there.
Right.
Like, our hearts can so quickly get attached to these things. Why are you trying to get so close to it? Get close to the Lord. Stay close to, stay connected to God.
That's awesome. That's a good conversation. Thanks so much, Thomas. Like always, Calvary, you can go to calvarybible.com. Stay connected. Get connected here at Calvary. It will help you, not a guarantee, in your walk with the Lord, as we learned today. Thank you. And also know that we are always praying for you. We love you. We look forward to any way we can help you live out your real life in Jesus Christ. Don't hesitate to reach out. Give us your questions, your comments. You can always make a comment in the YouTube video. That's where we look for them. Like always, thanks for listening. We look forward to the conversation.